Oh, yeah. Heading home. It is Thursday. It is high school football season eve. Coming up tomorrow, we've got your high school football coverage. And this is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. We're glad that you have taken some time out of your Thursday to join us. It's nice to have four down, one to go with this work week. And, of course, coming up tonight after our show, it is the season premiere of the High School Football Coaches Show presented by Hoopy Insurance Services. And that will start at 6 o'clock. It'll be an early edition, wrapping up around 6:45, so we can send it out to Mike Maz for coverage of Tin Caps Baseball. They'll take on the Dayton Dragons once again tonight down at Parkview Field. It is one of the last two remaining Thirsty Thursdays for the Tin Caps. That's right. They have the one tonight, and then they got another one coming up in 2 weeks. And that's all, folks. Season will be over. And, boy, based on how they played last night, that season being over can't come soon enough. You know, that was a bit of an anomaly last night, but it was not pretty baseball. Tin Caps had five errors. Even had a couple of plays, like a pass ball on a strike three, that allowed a base runner to not only reach, but it also allowed a base runner to come in from second base and score. Just an ugly game last night. Tin Caps ended up losing it 9-2, and they'll be back at it tonight. But like I said, Thirsty Thursday, great weather. Might as well be down at the ballpark tonight. Tickets are available. So, you know, and this time of year, it's not like a packed crowd. So concession lines aren't quite as bad. Tomorrow, Star Wars night down at Tin Caps Baseball. All right, so let's get to it. First of all, it is August 18th, and I am reminded every year as high school football season gets underway that it is my former producer, D.C. Hendricks' birthday. So happy birthday to D.C., who may or may not be listening this afternoon, but it is his birthday. Also, I had to get a passport because the Dons are going to go to Mexico. So I, for the first time in my life, went in to get a passport and, you know, filled out the paperwork. One of the questions they asked me was anniversary date, the date of our wedding. I've not been asked that on any kind of application before. And quite honestly, I didn't know the answer. I'm stuck at the post office trying to fill out this form to get my passport. And I know the date, which is an easy one because we got married on my wife's birthday. So I can double gift or whatever you would call that. I can like give one nice gift and it takes care of two occasions. But we got married in Las Vegas. And it was one of those deals. We would go to Vegas a couple of times a year, take extended weekends or whatever. And we'd actually been together, owned a house. Neither one of us after kind of a tough first marriage. Neither one of us were anxious to just race down the altar. And so we were having a very good relationship, very solid relationship. Everybody thought we were married for like 6, 7 years, 8 years prior to finally officially tying the knot. And we did it kind of spur of the moment, just called up one of the places out in Vegas. I think it was the, was it the Little White Chapel? It was the chapel that Kelly Ripa and her husband got married at, I believe, because I saw a piece done a few years ago on Live, and it was the same chapel. There were some of the, in fact, a couple of the same people that were there when we got married. And so it was not something that was like a year's worth of planning. There wasn't anything special that was happening in our lives. It was just, yeah, we're in Vegas. Maybe this is the time we just go out. Because every time we would go to Vegas, the first question we would get when we returned is, did you get married? And we're like, no, no. And then we'd go on another trip to Vegas, same thing. So today I got asked the question, what is your date of marriage? And I knew the date, did not know the year for sure. I had it narrowed down to 2 years, and I thought I knew the year. But then I started to second guess myself because I'm like, I don't want this passport delayed because I don't know. So I texted my wife. Now, would that? Do you think that would get me in trouble?
It should.
Is that pretty bad to not know what year you got married? I knew the date. I just wasn't quite sure. I thought, was it 2005 or 2006? But here's the thing, Caleb. I texted her. She didn't know either. So, we neither one of us knew exactly when. I mean, I'm like, well, you know, it'd be nice to know because we celebrate anniversaries, but we never give it a name. It's not like happy 15th anniversary, happy 6th. We don't count the years. And so it's been so long we haven't counted years. We forgot which year we started. And so she ends up coming up with a year and I come up with a year. And guess who got the year right? Yeah, it was me. Bonus points. So we are celebrating, this year we celebrated 16 years of marriage. 10 of them living in the same house, 6 of them not. That's a whole nother story. All right, so this deal got done today. The Big Ten made it official, announcing that the television rights contracts are done. And it is Fox, CBS, NBC, Peacock, and FS1 that all share in the Big Ten's media rights. Now, I believe this is more than just football. This is football, basketball. There's even some women's basketball in this package. But it starts July 1st, 2023, so about a year away. And then it will end 7 years later on June 30th, 2030. A 7-year deal that is going to accumulate what Action Network and Brett Murphy is reporting to be worth about $7 to $8 billion to the Big Ten. This is huge because you're starting to set the precedent now for the mega conference. Because here's the key. This is the big part of this deal. The contract includes an escalator clause that could escalate the deal to $10 billion if the Big Ten increases their membership. So basically, they're putting a carrot out there to give the Big Ten incentive to expand. Now that they've got their deals, now they're going to pressure the Big Ten to keep expanding, keep giving us more and more that we can cover, monopolize college football especially, so that all of the big games are going to come through our media package. Fox, CBS, NBC, Peacock, and FS1. 7-year deal, $7 to $8 billion, and an escalator clause that could get it to $10 billion. Now, here's what Brett McMurphy of Action Network is reporting, that the Big Ten is interested in expanding even beyond the 16 schools. And that's what they've got now. They're actually targeting Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, and Cal. Now, those are almost the same schools that we projected back when they signed USC and UCLA. Washington or Oregon were being talked about by news sources, but we sat here on this program the day that USC and UCLA, that the news of them jumping to the Big Ten surfaced, we sat here on this program and said it would only make sense if the Big Ten would expand to Stanford, Cal, because they're much like USC, UCLA, basically in the same place around the bay by San Francisco. And now I also thought, and I'll be fair here, Stanford and Cal were not the only two teams I thought the Big Ten might target. I also thought Arizona State, but they have not been mentioned or tied to the Big Ten in any way. But big news. Now, the Big Ten championship, the football championship, is going to be split between three networks, Fox, who will have it 4 times in the 7-year contract. They'll have it the odd years, 2023, 2025, 2027, 2029. CBS gets two of the remaining 3 years in 2024 and 2028, and NBC will be the home of the Big Ten Football Conference Championship game in 2026. So there you go. Now, what's it mean to the schools? Well, right now the school's collecting about $60 million a year, and apparently that payout will continue for the next couple of school years. But the last 5 years of the deal, Big Ten schools are going to be collecting about $100 million per school, which will also include the revenue from the College Football Playoff Bowl games and the NCAA basketball tournament. So what's it all mean, Caleb? What's your take?
I think it means that Notre Dame can stay independent, because there's a little caveat in this whole thing that the Irish will have the ability with NBC to still keep their two or three night games every year. And I think the Big Ten has a really good setup with the deal, because I think they were able to fleece what Greg Sankey and the SEC got, and they're obviously in a better position than the ACC. And all these grant of rights expire, you could see the Big Ten make some more raids here, what, in 2034?
This is like, it's a little like the NIL is what I think, though, Kayla. Like the NIL, we all know that certain schools have pools of funds, and even though the money is not supposed to be used to attract recruits, that's what a lot of the NIL money is being used for. It's attracting new students, new student athletes to their campuses. The Big Ten now has a pool of money that's kind of guaranteed, that will give you more if you expand more. And I think that's, you know, you talk about caveats. I think that's an interesting one, because it gives the Big Ten some incentive to go out and attract other schools. And they already have a pretty big carrot that they can put in front of Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Washington. And I don't know how big that carrot has to be, because Oregon and Washington, I think, are both schools that want to get into the Big Ten. Being from the Northwest, I don't think they see a fit with the SEC. And so, to me, it indicates that the Big Ten is going to probably expand at least more schools out west. And it said that is part of the Big Ten's initiative, is they want to expand to relieve some of the travel burden that has been placed on USC and UCLA as part of the Big Ten Conference. And so I think it's inevitable that we'll probably see those four other teams joining the Big Ten. The question is, does the Big Ten want to keep it as an even number? Do they want to go into three divisions? Let's see, they're at 16 right now. If you take five schools, you've got three 7-team divisions, right? That's a way to get away with 21 teams, because if you take Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, and Cal, add them to the current 16 teams, you've got 21, and you could have a West division. What would that include? Like Iowa and Nebraska? Along with the, you'd only need one school. Throw Nebraska out there. Because you'd have USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, and then maybe Nebraska. Then you could have a Midwest. What would be the seven teams then for the Midwest? Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Illinois, at five.
Indiana, Purdue, then you still have Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, Maryland, Rutgers.
I like that. I mean, that'd be fine with me.
But you're saying if you add Stanford, Cal, Washington, and Oregon, that puts you at 20.
I said you have the room to go to 21. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
At 20, two 10-team divisions, maybe.
Yeah.
But if you go to 21, now you can make it three 7-team divisions. And, 22, you got to start figuring out, do we want 11 teams in a division? But that gives them the opportunity to maybe have three divisions. I don't know how you would do a playoff if you had three divisions. That's got to be somebody will text in.
I think the other thing that the Big Ten got right with this deal that I think hurts the SEC, it's not just that the Big Ten has three media partners. They have three over-the-air network media partners as opposed to a cable slash streaming channel, and ESPN with the SEC in their deal. So casual fans will still have access, or people who are just flipping channels could stumble across Big Ten football between noon Eastern and after 11 p.m. Eastern every single Saturday.
In the negotiations, ESPN saw the future of sports television as streaming. That's why they're raising the prices in ESPN Plus. They're trying to add more offerings on ESPN Plus. A lot of the, you've got rugby, you've got lacrosse. I mean, you've got all these other sports, the Olympic sports that are on ESPN Plus. And I think ESPN went into the contract with the SEC believing that the direction television viewing or sports viewing on TV or video is changing, that the habits are getting away from terrestrial watching and more into the pay-per-view or subscription model. That's why ESPN was aggressive. It's not because they thought they could get them on the network. And of course, ESPN's not even a terrestrial type network.
Yeah, and they can put games on ABC, for example.
Right.
But I think with the Big Ten having nearly 12 hours of free over-the-air television coverage, plus they have their different streaming packages as part of this to satisfy more of a younger audience and their watching habits. To me, they've found a way to promote from channel to channel, to have significant and consistent time slots on established channels. Think about the Big Ten Network when it started. Very few people had it. People were upset. Like, this is as good as you are going to get. This is essentially an NFL level broadcast deal or better than what the NFL currently has with their current packages.
That's, I wonder how much this squeezes the Big Ten Network, though. I wonder what they get left. I don't know if there's more or less Big Ten football to be carried on the Big Ten Network once these contracts are satisfied. By the way, Greg Sankey, I think, was looked at during the COVID period as being an innovative leader among all conference commissioners, right? Kevin Warren was looked at, well, I can't even say probably the
they
word.
Wanted to fire him, to put it nicely.
Yeah. Does this change the perspective you have of either man?
To me, this whole thing says that the Big Ten was able to maximize their value by getting away from a legacy TV provider, whereas the SEC, which already seemed pretty tied at the hip with ESPN to begin with the SEC network and the college football playoff, and just through the success of the conference with that, went with the easy option. And I think the Big Ten will benefit long term. They've already added two legacy programs in the coming years with USC and UCLA. And while the SEC has also added those programs, Oklahoma and Texas, I still think the Big Ten comes out the winner here. They got better TV markets out of it.
Is the number one job for the commissioner to monetize the value of your league?
Yeah. And he's absolutely done that, unquestionably.
46862, Parkview Sports Madison text line, 46862. Kevin Bowen's going to join us this hour. He'll be giving us an update on what's happening with those scrimmages between the Colts and the Detroit Lions. He'll come up at 4:35. Also on the way in hour number two, we've got your high school football picks of the week. We also get a preview of the Northside Legends with Coach Ben Johnson, Eric Dukevich for Parkview Sports Medicine. A busy Thursday here on the Sports Rush. Yes, sir. Brett Rupp, proud to be married since 2006. I know that now. Learned that today, something I wasn't quite sure of what year that was. So it's 16 years and counting for marriage number two for me. By the way, today, Deshaun Watson got a settlement. We now know what the official deal is going to be for Deshaun Watson. No more having to wonder, is he going to get 5 games, 6 games, 12 games, 16 games? Is it going to be 16 games indefinitely, where he'll have to apply for reinstatement? What it is 11 games with $5 million as a fine. I think it's probably the best case scenario for Deshaun Watson. I think most of us expected it would be at least 12 games. He ended up working a deal for 11. Deshaun Watson wanted to pay no fine. I think he agreed to pay the fine to get the 12th game. By the way, is the 12th game really against Houston?
Yeah, that's why this whole thing feels like such a joke to me.
Yeah, 11 is an odd number, and 12 is against his former team. But, I mean, to me, it's does the NFL save face here? Because they took a bit of a public relations hammering when the original deal from the judge was only 6 games. Doesn't seem like 11 is all that much more than 6, considering the severity of what he did. I mean, it's not just whether or not the women did this. What's the word I'm looking for? But if they agreed to these types of things, or if they settled and so there's no court case, that is, you know, that's part of it. And it's an important part of it. And I'm not trying to diminish the importance of that. But it was the behavior of Deshaun Watson on how he would, I mean, he became a predator. And that's the part that I think is, I mean, that's worth to me 6 games by itself, is the fact that he went on to Instagram or Facebook or social media accounts to search out specific massage therapists with one intention. And it became very apparent because of the pattern of the behavior that's exactly what he was doing. Was he was using his status to get appointments. I mean, what, you know, massage therapist, a good intending massage therapist wouldn't be thrilled to have an opportunity to have Deshaun Watson as a client, not expecting what was going to happen at those appointments. And so he was using his status as an NFL player, which to me is enough to deserve multiple games here, because I don't believe he'd have had the ability to do what he did without being famous, being an NFL football player. Number one, I don't think it would have been kept quiet as long as it did. I think there were people and even the Texans that were, I think, wanting to keep this quiet because they were trying to protect their star quarterback. To me, 11 games, he got out with about as little possible punishment as he possibly could have come out with. That's just my opinion. I expected it to be 12. If it was a negotiated settlement, if it was something that was decided by the NFL, I thought it'd be 16 games, one full season. If it was something that he was able to negotiate a deal, then it was going to be 12 games. I don't know how he got it to under 11, but I do find some irony in the fact that Houston happens to be the next opponent.
It's like the NFL can say, oh, we went tough. We nearly doubled from 6 to 11 games and a $5 million fine, but you can see right through it when they're pandering to getting a TV audience for that Houston-Cleveland matchup. I mean, it's ridiculous. But also, shouldn't we expect this, right? Somehow, magically, Houston is the opponent. I mean, come on. Of course that was going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably, it's one of those setups where you look at the schedule and you think it's an accident that the Browns and Carolina happen to be week one?
No.
No. And who else is on Carolina's schedule? Are the Jets? Got Sam Darnold's old team? I think did they play last year? Carson Wentz comes to Indy. That's another example. I mean, and a lot of this is not determined by the NFL saying we want this team to play this team, because those schedules are already set up. But it is kind of ironic the placement in the season that some of these games get, because, you know, in other words, Carolina and Cleveland could have been put anywhere in the schedule, and yet they put them right there in week one. where you know exactly what the draw is going to be to that football game. And now I don't know if Baker Mayfield's going to start, not going to start. I expect he's the starter in Carolina. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk to Kevin Bowen from 93.5 107.5, The Fan down in Indy. When we return, we'll get our Colts update from KB next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rupp with Caleb Hatch coming up on the show. I've got my first edition of the High School Football Picks of the Week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. That happens, I don't know. I was going to give you how many minutes away, but I'll just say around 5:12 this afternoon, somewhere, maybe 5:10. 5:10 sounds like a better number. So we'll plan 5:10. High school football picks of the week, high school football coverage tomorrow night. And of course, Ben Johnson, coach of the Northside Legends, joins us at 5:20. Let's talk Colts football right now with Kevin Bowen from 93.5 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis, where he co-hosts the morning show. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hey, what's up, Brett?
How you doing? We're going to do something different today. I am going to not ask you a single question. I'm going to phrase everything in a statement and just let you react.
Okay. I like it.
It's just like, I don't want to make this sound like I'm always interviewing you. We're having a talk about Colts football, and I started to think about this today, and I thought that, you know, the one way to get away from the interview format is not ask a question. So I just throw a comment out there, and I get your response. The Colts are gaining absolutely nothing with this time and the practice field against the Detroit Lions.
I would disagree with that. You know, are the Lions the ultimate NFL barometer? No. But, you know, this is day 11 and 12 of training camp. By this point, Bobby Okereke knows how Mo Alie-Cox comes out of a break and positions himself for, you know, catch and all those things. Michael Pittman and Stephon Gilmore are tired of seeing each other. Yannick Ngakoue knows Matt Pryor's strengths and weaknesses, and Matt Pryor knows vice versa with Yannick Ngakoue. So at the very least, you are just seeing somebody different. And I think that is important, especially when, you know, come Saturday, it doesn't sound like many starters are going to play in that game. So I think when you factor that in, I think it's important at this point of camp to do something differently. Again, on the scale of 1 to 32, you're in the bottom with this test, but at least you have somebody different to go up against, you know, now at week 3 or week 4 of camp.
And again, these are random statements. They are not necessarily opinion-based. So this is not me making statements. This is just random statements about the Colts that Kevin Bowen gets to respond to. At this point in his career, Matt Ryan is not the best quarterback in the AFC South.
Boy, that's a good one. I think Ryan Tannehill gets a pretty bad rap. To be honest with you, I watched the wild card game just like everyone else did, but I also saw a Tennessee team that lost Derrick Henry midseason and go 6-3 without him. Do I think Tannehill benefits when he has a lot of talent around him to manage things and losing A.J. Brown is a lot? Sure. I would kind of say flip a coin almost with Tannehill and Ryan. You know, a lot of it is really projecting guys that, in Tannehill's case, much earlier in his career, nowhere near the amount of success that Matt Ryan had, but it was getting him out of kind of a dysfunctional situation in Miami, and he's found pretty stable ground in Tennessee. Matt Ryan, you know, reached very high levels. Some dysfunction has arisen at Atlanta. And now the question is, what does he have left in the tank in a little bit more of a stable situation? And obviously both quarterbacks walked in a really good run game. So Tannehill was initially a backup behind Mariota and then became the starter. You know, I think Trevor Lawrence could be in for a nice jump in year two. So they got something to keep an eye on. You know, for 2022, I'd probably put maybe Tannehill 1A, Ryan 1B, you know, Lawrence 2, and then, you know, a little bit of a drop to Davis Mills. Obviously, if I was projecting out a little bit, my answer would be different, but that's probably how I view things.
One position group that's being overlooked and basically an assumption that they're going to be good is the offensive line. And Colts fans and coaches should be more concerned than they are about this offensive line.
Yeah, and by the way, this is a nice little, you're a radio professional with how you I am taking mental notes on this. You know, Brett, I think a lot of it is, what do we consider the Colts' O-line these days? I didn't see elite last year. Did injuries play into that? Sure. You know, this season, it was one quarter. I didn't love what I saw in Buffalo either last Saturday. I still think it can be a top-10 offensive line. I think it needs to continue to be that sort of product in order for this, you know, offense to reach the levels that they want it to. I'm a little bit concerned about the backup offensive line group. It's a vastly inexperienced group based off what you had last year. I was crunching some numbers actually today after practice, Brett. In week one last year, I guess probably just the month of September, if you looked at the backup offensive linemen for the Colts, five of them totaled 75 career starts. That is a really big number, you know, for a backup group. If you look at the healthy backup offensive linemen right now, they don't have a single start in the NFL. So I do think that is something just to keep an eye on if there are some injuries up front. Now, Dennis Kelly, Purdue product, I think a lot of people will know the name. He's got 50-some starts in the league. He's currently hurt, injured his knee early in camp, had to have a procedure done, so we'll see when he returns. But that is a group that I think just deserves a little bit more monitoring. Like, usually it was just, hey, you wake up and the Colts had a top 5 O-line. Well, I think in the past few years, we've just seen natural offensive line attrition start to hit that group, whereas in, you know, 2019, 2020, it really didn't hit that group.
The Colts' failure to sign a wide receiver in the offseason and bring in a bona fide number 2 wideout is going to potentially cost them a chance at an AFC South division title.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. You know, you go back to March and April, Brett, and you see a couple teams in the AFC that didn't reach the heights that they wanted to last year, you know, playoff-caliber teams, two run-heavy teams in Tennessee and Cleveland, make moves with non-premium draft picks of a Amari Cooper trade for Cleveland, a Robert Woods trade to Tennessee. You see Allen Robinson, you know, a player the Colts had interest in a few years ago, just signed a deal as well. You know, those are moves that I just felt like at the time could have eased a lot of things for the Colts in pressing the need at wideout. I've made this analogy before on our show. The Colts really need for Alec Pierce and Paris Campbell, both of them, to hit right now. And expecting a rookie to do that right now and expecting Paris Campbell to do that given his health history is almost like, you know, in blackjack kind of hitting on 16 or 17. And again, you really need both of them. I'm reminded day in and day out how good Michael Pittman is at Colts camp, and I'm also reminded day in and day out how important he is. You know, I thought Alec Pierce had a great day yesterday. I think there's been some really nice moments, but still, you expect rookies to produce from day one. That's just a lot to ask for at that consistent level week in and week out. So that is probably the biggest concern I have entering this season. And I would also group tight ends with that. You know, tight end-wise, you are really unproven. And now the Drew Ogletree injury is probably added to your depth questions.
Switching to the other side of the football, this Colts defense has a chance to be the best defense in the NFL.
Oh, no, I can't go there. Yeah, I got to see more. Do I think it's improved unit? Do I think there's been strides? Certainly, I really like Ngakoue. I think Gilmore has been pretty impressive throughout camp, but I can't say that just yet. You know, what does the four-man rush look like? How consistent is that? You know, I think those are all things that you know, it's just kind of wait and see, you know, with that group. So I feel like at times you've seen them, you know, flirt with like 10, 11, 12 in that defensive range. But I think if you can prove that you aren't as reliant on the turnovers as I feel like you were, that is something to keep an eye on.
Colts defense has a chance to lead the NFL in takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, last year they were, what, second? You know, Shaquille Leonard's health is probably a big factor, and I think his availability for the start of the season is very much up in the air, so that plays into it. But I think if you can create more pressure and more of a consistent rush, then all of a sudden you have something there to where you're able to dial up maybe a few more turnovers. So I think that is a that's a statement that it's possible. I don't know if I'd bet on that. I mean, lead the league, again, that's just so lofty without knowing if they're going to have a consistent pass rush or not. And there have been some turnover days, but, you know, that's probably a good thing for Matt Ryan. You know, I don't think they turned over Jared Goff in either of these two practices. And for the most part, Ryan's protected the ball pretty well in camp. So it's not like we've seen an abundance of turnovers in camp.
Final statement for you to react to. Actually, I've got two more. General Manager Chris Ballard is sick and tired of hearing Kevin Bowen talk about the wide receiving group.
That would be accurate. Yes, he definitely is. Yeah, I saw him at camp yesterday, and he just kind of gave me a Bowen. And I'm like, yep, you don't need to say anymore. I'm sure you've heard what I've said. So, that is an accurate statement there. I just, you know, at the end of the day, Brett, I just don't feel like he values wide receiver how a lot of the league values it. And I feel like the Colts are extremely reliant on Jonathan Taylor creating opportunities in the pass game, which does make sense. And also very reliant on Frank Reich and Matt Ryan to scheme things up and kind of win mentally, which, again, those guys, I think, do give you opportunity to do that. But at the same time, there comes a point in any game, you saw it in the Super Bowl last year, where just guys on the outside just got to win. And guys, frankly, just have to win one-on-one matchups. And as much as you want to scheme it up, maybe it doesn't, you know, isn't schemed up perfectly. And, of course, I feel like so many people countered with the Buffalo game last week of, like, well, you know, the Colts weren't scheming things up. Well, I mean, neither was Buffalo. You know, it's kind of both and with that. So when, you know, schemes hit each other and, you know, it's kind of a stalemate, you got to have your individual talent win one-on-one and make those plays. And I just don't know if the Colts have enough talent there to do that on a consistent basis.
Remember, I cannot ask this in the form of a question. Deshaun Watson gets 11 games.
Yeah, that is... you know, what's really bothered me about the Watson situation, you know, legally, it's way above my pay grade to state if his punishment, you know, meets the crime or me, I guess in this case, you know, he hasn't been convicted of that. But just like the weirdness of it all and his kind of smugness and thinking he can get away with this and zero signs of remorse, just for that, frankly, I wish he would have got more than 11 games. And again, I know I'm speaking just out of like personal beliefs with that. But it just almost seems like he kind of was walked around with this whole thing thinking he's, you know, mightier than everybody else, which is disappointing because I really liked, you know, what I saw from Deshaun Watson. I've always liked him on the football field. It seemed like at Clemson, you know, he's a really stand up guy and he does do some great things in the community. But I was really, you know, and it's just, sounds bad, and so there's no pun intended with this, but I was really kind of rubbed the wrong way by how Watson has handled all this publicly, even his comments today. I guess a question that I will throw to you, Brett, if I can, and I will go question, not statement. 11 games, Deshaun Watson's out. What would Jacoby Brissett's record have to be with the Browns for them to stick with Brissett the rest of the season?
That I don't think there's any chance they do that. They're too invested in Deshaun Watson. And, I mean, at this point...
9-2, leading the AFC North in the month of December. You would say, Jacoby, sorry about you. We're going with Deshaun Watson, who has not played football in nearly 2 years.
It's my show, Kevin. Stop asking me questions. but you're. I mean, I understand your point.
You could probably laugh at Jacoby Brissett being 9-2.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I don't expect that to happen, and I feel like, you know, the Browns can't wait to get Deshaun Watson back. And it would take something absolutely unbelievable with tremendous fan pressure and all for them to stick with Jacoby Brissett. You know, they don't have the toughest part of the schedule early. They got a chance to get out to a pretty decent start. But I think by the time they get to that 12th game, there's going to be pretty much a united front that fans and the coaches and the front office are going to be ready to hand the football to Deshaun Watson. And I don't mean that as a knock on Jacoby Brissett, but I think the fans are going to be ready after 11 weeks of watching Jacoby to have someone else out there. And I say that really as a Colts fan that watched Jacoby through an entire season. And if you could tell me that, you know, a guy like Andrew Luck could be handed the ball in week 12, I wouldn't care what Jacoby's record was. I'd hand the ball to Andrew Luck regardless. And so that's why I just don't think that it's going to happen. That would be my guess. But also, I think Deshaun Watson, because to me, it's almost an addition of the, what was it, Dateline that did the To Catch a Predator series and all this. It's almost like Dateline should have shown up at a massage therapy office down in Houston because they could have caught Deshaun Watson in the act 60-some times that he scheduled these appointments and women filed complaints and all this. So to me, it's just it's the predatory behavior, which to me is just as bad as some of the acts that were, you know, reported by witnesses and the women that came forward. I think 11 games, Deshaun Watson should be thrilled. And I think the Browns feeling like they can get him back at the end of the season and maybe salvage a playoff spot, which I think if you ask this question, Kevin, I'll ask you, well, I can't ask, but I'll just say it and I'll let you respond. The Cleveland Browns record through 11 games will be no better than 7-4.
Yeah, they will not be 7-4. I do think the Browns have a pretty good team in general, but I would say it'd be much closer to 500, if not below 500, because I think it's a really tough division that we aren't talking enough about either.
Well, okay,
and that was very well said, by the way, on the Watson front. Yeah, I mean, it is. It is catch a predator like stuff. It is creepy. It's thinking that he's in some dominant position, can get away with everything. I think it's really sadly. You had to say it, but it's very well said.
I mean, that just adds to me, and I said this earlier in the show, that it adds to the punishment to me, the fact that he used his status as an NFL player to cover this up and to be able to get these appointments and continue this predatory behavior without someone, you know, basically reporting him. I mean, it seems to me that it went on too long. Kevin, we got to run. You know how that works. But always enjoy having you on the show. It was kind of fun doing this a little different way today. So, you know, I want to know what happened at camp, but I can't think of a way to. Well, let me just say the Colts and Lions went at it today in Westfield.
I would say the Lions maybe had a little bit better day than the Colts. For the most part, I think Colts were the better team over the 2 days. But situationally today, the Lions definitely had the better day to close things out.
There we go. Kevin, appreciate it. As always, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you again.
All right, thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Yep, that is Kevin Bowen, 93.5/107.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Still coming up, we've got the high school football picks of the week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. That comes up around 5:10. We also have Ben Johnson, Northside Legends coach, and Eric Dukevich lined up. It's a busy, busy Thursday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.